Dipati sahampati katanjaliyan divarangaya chata santidasata parajaka jataka te se tu dhamma Anukampimang Pajang.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami. So good evening, everyone, and happy to be here, Seattle Insight, and this is my second venture into Seattle Insight. I was here last year, and basically came up to Seattle for the same reason as last year, sort of try to give some helping and encouragement to the people here in Seattle and to the monks here at Clear Mountain. So young, energetic, idealistic monks trying to start something new. That's great. And I've started a few monasteries in my life, and I wish them well. But it's great. There's a lot of, there's a lot of good kind of interest, sincere interest here in the Seattle area, and to receive the kind of interest and encouragement from Seattle Insight, who've been here for a long time. That's is very meaningful. As it's, I think it's just important to pay attention to community, the kind of building a community takes time and effort and attention and I think that as a Buddhist community, we have the opportunity to rely on the principles that the Buddha laid down for us, and that's it's a great opportunity. And to recognize in a place like Seattle, which is a large population center, there's a real range of expression of of the Dhamma, of the Buddhist teachings, and I think it's great that there's a well-established lay center that is interested in helping to a nascent monastic expression of the Dhamma. So it's a, because I think the a you know, I lived in Thailand for many, many years, and that you just realize that there's many ways of practicing, many ways of expressing the Dhamma, and it's helpful to have these different forms to be able to see what, you know, what works for oneself, what fits, and then because it is say what comes to mind is in the say in the same way that we say when we have something to eat, we want to eat something that we enjoy, but that's also good for us. And in the same way that there's these different expressions of the Dhamma, and they are a nourishment for the heart, and it's the Dhamma that the Buddha taught is a nourishment for the heart, and learning how to, but you have to sort of figure out how to do that so that it really is nourishing, and the and in terms of the traditional teachings, the Buddha talks in ways of, you like things that we give nourishment or nutriment to. It's like nourishing the hindrances. You know, we're pretty good at that. Nourishing is kind of sense desire, irritation, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, doubt. It's not that these things just randomly come and obsess, sort of assault us. We have to feed them, and it's our attention that does that. So just learning how to recognize when we are feeding on our anger, or feeding on our irritation, feeding on our seeking distraction in sense kind of stimulation. I mean, there's lots there. There's lots there to for the mind to get engaged with. But is it actually nourishing? Is it nourishing the heart? And you find that when the mind goes out to the senses in a way that is not really nourishing clarity or peace or goodwill, and then we suffer. And just think of there's a Thai forest master. A disciple of Ajahn Mun, Budun, and he reformulated the Four Noble Truths in a slightly different way that I think is really extremely helpful. So that the first and second are switched, and third and fourth are switched in order, and that the mind going out. And that's one of the beauties of the Thai language, is you don't have to be too specific. And in English, we tangle ourselves up with details. The mind going out is the cause of dukkha, of suffering. The result of the mind going out is suffering. And it's just quite a natural cause and effect relationship, which of course is what the Four Noble Truths is, and of course that is very, very central to the Buddhist teaching, Buddhist way. And then the mind knowing. The mind knowing the mind, the mind knowing itself, is the way leading to the end of suffering. And the result of the mind knowing the mind is the cessation, the ending of suffering, the realization, awakening, nibbana. It's a very direct way of expressing the Buddha's teachings and the Buddha's path, and to be able to just pay attention. What is the mind going out and knowing the mind? And so, and again, similar, one of the ways of trying to understand that more clearly is, okay, what am I feeding on? And am I feeding on peace? Because that's really skillful. It's really wholesome. Do I take my nourishment and nutriment from loving kindness and compassion? And that's really incredibly wholesome. Do I feed on the hindrances? And I was thinking of before being here, I was in Portland, and I went out to the Hermitage in White Salmon along the Columbia River Gorge, and there. Ajahn Guy had never, this is his first trip to America, so he'd never been up in this area. So we taking him out to the gorge. So we stopped at Multnomah Falls. Everybody has to stop at Multnomah Falls. And then we stopped at the Bonneville Dam and looked at the locks and the fish ladders. And of course, there is a place where they've all sorts of sturgeon, and sturgeon are bottom feeders. And so I was thinking, just now, you're feeding on the hindrances. So kind of bottom feeder, sort of the bottom feeders of the human realm. Not so useful, not so beautiful, but it's what we do. It's not just to being able to recognize that we can nourish ourselves with more beautiful things, more wholesome quality things, and similarly, when the Buddha talks of that nutriment, that what we nourish the heart with, seven factors of awakening. And this sense of these, we have this option to turn our attention to feeding on mindfulness, awareness, clarity, just finding that satisfying, nourishing. The investigation of Dhamma, Dhamma Vicaya, the investigation of Dhamma, investigation of phenomena, investigation of the way things are. Really challenging the mind to take one's attention and draw it to that and see what kind of nourishment comes from that. Energy or effort, finding, because that's the Buddha, and that you that sense of right effort is what is, and the Buddha says, say effort as a effort energy as an awakening factor. It is what is right effort in the path, and it's because sometimes we we think if we just keep ourselves busy, we're putting forth effort, it's not necessarily the case, and it's actually very rarely the case, so that learning how to direct our effort and energy in a way that's really balanced, and because that's in terms of the right effort that accords with the Noble Eightfold Path, I think it's helpful to reflect on the Pali words that are used, because when we say right in English, again, we tried to draw these very tight distinctions, and we said, and there's right and there's wrong, and there's black and there's white, and if you're not getting it right, you're obviously wrong. Yeah. And so that, but what does the Buddha mean? And the word that the Buddha has ended up being translated as right is samma, and it's an interesting word because its derivation is it's a musical term, and so that what is right is sort of the sense of right in tune, just right. It's harmonizing with the other factors, the way that Ajahn Chah used to say that the nature of Dhamma is that which is just right. And so it's not, say, an absolute black or white, but it's what is it that harmonizes with the rest of our factors in our life and leads to a sense of freedom from suffering, freedom from stress and discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and brightens the mind, brightens the heart, brings clarity and lucidity, so that this sense of just right that's a factor. Because similarly, what we feed on, that has to be just right also. There you have to pay attention to what works for you, because lots of things taste good. They're not so good for you. We used to have this great donut shop in Redwood Valley, and it was a real treat, but it wasn't good for anybody. So in the same way, just in terms of mental states and moods and objects of attention, and you have to pay attention to what really nourishes the heart, both in terms of the impact in the present and the impact over time. Because you want to leave the heart clear and still. and kind of bright and peaceful. That is that's the kind of qualities that we want to be nurturing and nourishing. And a sense of stillness doesn't preclude, say, investigation of phenomena, investigation of, you really want to be curious and reflective, investigating, know how to turn attention to investigation, so you start to get some discernment. And it's a really, I think Ajahn Jeff did a great service to, say, the Buddhist world by translating, I mean, many terms he's translated in sort of alternative ways that are really useful, and that sense of what is normally translated as wisdom, I mean, he translates as discernment. And because wisdom has this kind of static quality, and it is a noun. So a noun is a thing that is then fairly solid. But discernment is it's a gerund, so it's based on a verb, and verbs are moving, they're dynamic, and our quality of investigation and discerning what's useful, what's not useful, what's beneficial, what's skillful, it's really important to engage the mind in that way, so that this discernment starts to shine forth. And I'd say these are our again, it's just using reflection. What are we nourishing the mind with? Because if we're just trying to get wisdom somehow, then it's always going to recede into the. It becomes an object of desire, but if we're using a way of reflecting, investigating, discerning what is actually leading to peace and clarity, what's leading to freedom from suffering, then it's an ongoing exploration, which is really important, and to be able to nourish the heart with that exploration, because sometimes our practice can be so goal-oriented that we forget to look after ourselves. We set up an ideal of what we think we should be or what we should be getting. And if it is based on desire, and it usually is, it's always going to keep receding away from one. You never quite get there, because that's the whole function of desire is just to keep you wanting, and of course that's why the Buddha says, desire is the cause of suffering, or we need to be learning how to use that. Transform that desire into an awakening factor, or a factor that supports this process. But then it's a different, in Pali, it's a different word. It's the word chanda, which is similarly translated as desire, but it's the desire that is more like interest, interest, and or like motivation, because we do need to motivate ourselves. We do need to know how to bring up attention and bring up investigation. Again, effort and energy. The Buddha places a high value on effort and energy. There's some places where he himself describes his teaching as a, what's in Pali, a viryavada, a teaching of effort, a teaching, and it relies on this application of it. It doesn't just come out of, you know, well, the idiom, the grace of God. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. We need to use that just right kind of attention and effort and investigation. The Dhamma is that which is just right. Again, thinking back to this, again, the arousing of effort, and sometimes we get too sort of obsessed striving, and our sense of meaning and purpose comes from doing something. But then, you know, then it's usually, okay, I need to chill, I need to stop. And that, it doesn't quite work either. Thinking of what popped into my mind was a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, and there's always some good Dhamma there. Calvin sitting sort of slumped in an easy chair watching the television, and Hobbes comes in, you know, what you doing? I'm killing time while I wait for the for life to shower me with meaning and happiness. It doesn't quite work that way. Learning how to put forth just the right effort, a sense of balance, and again, this sense of nourishment, where the effort that we put in is really nourishing our aspirations for well-being and a sense of ease in our life. And then the factors of awakening, of joy. Sometimes practice of Dhamma can get pretty joyless if one is just too serious or too obsessed or too tight and narrow how one holds things. Because we can, sort of, somehow the means and the end don't line up, you know. So that sense of paying attention to what brings a sense of joy. Same in the other factor is tranquility, ease, sense of ease. So that one wants to nourish and seek that nutriment of joy, and this is from the Buddha. This isn't some New Age teaching or something. This is 2,500 years ago, and the Buddha sort of saying, "You nutriment is important, and the nutriment for joy and tranquility are really important to be a factor of awakening." Because it brightens and encourages the mind. Because you can't just sort of kind of slog your way to Nibbana somehow. It doesn't quite work. The reality is there's some tough things that you have to face in our habits and our conditioning, but also you have to hold it in a way that it doesn't dampen one's delight in what's really good, what's really true. And so it is important to see, how do I nurture this sense of joy? And then that helps to settle the mind, and joy, tranquility. Next factor is samadhi. And that, and of course, concentration to me is a terrible translation of samadhi. It's the more in the Thai language, when it's translated, it's sort of the firm establishing of the mind. That's a nice image, or composure, settling, stilling. Those are helpful translations of the word samadhi. And then that the last enlightenment factor, awakening factor, is equanimity, a sense of equipoise and firmness. Unshakability is a really nice word. When the mind, the heart is unshakable in the face of the pleasing and the pleasant and the unpleasant, the wanted and the unwanted, because you have to face all that anyway. But to have that sense of equanimity, mindfulness, clarity, steadiness, a steadiness within the realm of change, so equanimity is an awakening factor. The paying attention to what we nourish. How do we nourish that? How do we nurture that? Of course, doesn't Ajahn Kovilo have a forthcoming book about this?
Well-being Cascade.
Yeah, the well-being cascade is really, it's an important perspective to be reflecting on and reminding oneself of, because if we pay attention to the right things, it naturally leads, because the image that the Buddha uses is one of the kind of water coming down a mountain, and of course you've got mountains here, so the rain starts on top, and it starts with little river. It starts with just drops of rain, and then it just turns into little rivulets, little streams, little creeks, into rivers, and into big rivers, and then out into the ocean. And it's a cascade that naturally gathers momentum. And so that in the same way, if we nourish mindfulness and investigation of Dhamma, nourish the effort and well-being, tranquility, is nourishing these qualities, and the natural place that it takes us to is awakening, is freedom from suffering. So not sort of setting up an ideal of what one wants to be, but paying attention to the causes and conditions that set things in place for a natural. In the same way that when one, if you eat material food, you get full. And that's a natural result. And so it's in the same way we're practicing the Dhamma. In a reflective and skillful way, and a discerning way, it leads to peace and well-being, to a realization of truth. So offer that for reflection this evening and open it up for questions if anybody has any.
Sadhu, Sadhu.